Hey, this is Jonathan Goodman, and I have incredibly exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, is now available for purchase in Kindle, in Audible, and in hardcover. Anywhere that you find books, please go on Amazon, please go to whatever bookstore you like, buy yourself a copy, buy a copy for a friend. Hope that you absolutely love it. Now let's get into the show. Welcome back to the Obvious Choice podcast. This is our first time recording in like a month. Yes. We had a backlog. We were repurposing some stuff. We took a break over the holidays. And of course, the Obvious Choice book is coming out in a week from now from recording this. My guess is this will go live awesome. In and around probably the launch. But what I wanted to do here, what I thought would be fun, was actually to go over all of the marketing and the strategy and the planning for the book itself. It's the first time I've ever done this. It might be the only place that I ever do this in detail. And the reason why I want to do it now is because we don't know the outcomes yet of any of the marketing. Won't know that for quite some time. But I thought that it would be good to record this now just before the launch comes out, because it'll be kind of a real time, like how I'm feeling emotionally. I'm exhausted physically, but also just what I feel went well, what didn't feel good. I did some things that have worked really, really well, and other things I think were really, really good ideas, but were just not the right type of thing for me because of how I know that I operate. And I think I secretly knew that and I was worried about it. And so now that we're so close to the launch, I can kind of report on how a lot of this stuff has gone down. And I hope that this is helpful for you. So this is going to be like in a lot of detail, some philosophical higher level stuff, some really, really nitty gritty like book launch stuff. If you're marketing anything, I think that you'll find this useful, not for the specific examples, but for the mindset of how to approach it and how to decide what you do and don't do. I think when you're marketing anything these days, it's really important to choose what you do and do the hell out of it and ignore other stuff. And also be willing to kind of course correct. For example, like we course corrected with podcast appearances kind of throughout. And, you know, the first thing that I'll say is going into the marketing for this book, The Obvious Choice, I was always looking at the launch of the book not as kind of a make a do or die thing, but as the beginning of a 10-year flywheel. Not as, hey, if this launch doesn't go well, we're screwed. I think you always need to look at a product that you launch as the launch itself needs to be a celebration. You do so much of the work beforehand to put things in place, and you'll see what I mean, that by the time that the launch happens, good stuff needs to already have been happening, or, you know, pre-orders or whatever, that the launch itself, you can actually do it as more a celebration and not be stressed or worried about it. But then build into that things that are going to work for you, you know, hopefully for years to come, as a flywheel kind of more and more and more. And so you need to look at this as a through a long lens, I guess. So much of the business building, so much of the marketing advice that we get, I think is very, very short term. And I don't ever want to do anything where I do that thing once and then it's done and then I don't get any benefit out of it afterwards. I'm willing to work really, really hard for sure, but I want that work to work for me for a long time. And so we already went deep into why I chose traditional publishing over self-publishing. Amber, if you wouldn't mind grabbing the number of that episode, perhaps we can share that episode afterwards. If you're interested more about the publishing journey, about the mindset, about the economics of it, there's a lot of false economies that people report with self-publishing. There's very few people that I've kind of been through the journey that I've been through where I've done self-publishing, sold hundreds of thousands of books self-publishing, and built businesses based off of those books and now doing traditional publishing. And so I can give you a really good kind of, hey, you know, here's what goes into both.
Hey,
and
as a positive, as I'm looking it up in Google, the obvious choice in like the guest results by Google, the obvious choice book is the first result. I don't know if that means anything, but that's cool to see.
What does that mean? Oh, when you like Google the obvious choice?
Yeah. When it starts to auto guess things.
Oh, I see.
Obvious choice book is the
first.
That
might be a function of your previous web browser searching, though.
I mean, I always search for the podcast.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, regardless, I'm sure that HarperCollins has done some stuff like that. Yeah. Okay. So there's lots of stuff that I'm going to get into here. I'm going to get into acquiring endorsements and blurbs for the book. You know, if somebody doesn't know who I am, are they going to see somebody else's name that said that the book is good, that they're going to trust? So who do you get? How do you get access to them? How do you get that person to stop what they're doing and say something nice about the book? How that process all goes down? Building the team for the book launch and the personal brand team, I actually followed advice from the Obvious Choice book to find two people who were phenomenal. So this is like hiring, really. Organizing the outreach. I mean, we had 700-800 names of people that we needed to organize the outreach for, individual messages to, multiple follow-ups to them, everything from people who we wanted to send VIP books to people who we wanted to build a relationship with, leading up to the book so that we could hopefully send them a sample copy of the book, to podcasters, et cetera. So keeping track of all of them, like the spreadsheet, like that type of thing. Why we decided on a book launch team, why I didn't do big book bundle offers, and why I executed the book launch team really poorly, but it was a really good idea, and how I'm going to do that differently or not do that next time. Deciding on why I didn't actually narrate my own audiobook. And then talent scouting, something I learned very, very early on through the PTDC. If you want to be around for a very, very long time, you have to actually lift the next generation up. And so I've actually gifted, and I'll talk to you about how I've gifted, but I've actually gifted a lot of copies to young college entrepreneurs of The Obvious Choice. So I'll talk to you about that. The build-up, how we tested a lot of the stories, a lot of the content, building up and iterated on it. So that now the week of the launch, we already know that the content works and we're reposting the stuff that works. Pre-orders, pushing pre-orders, moving to early chapters, all of this type of stuff. And then the actual launch itself, the everywhere effect, the podcast tour, the VIP boxes, strategic bulk buys, what we're doing with meme videos. There is a lot. So let's dig into it. I feel like I've teased it enough. First off, let's talk about acquiring blurbs. I was really nervous about this. We've spoken about this a bit before on the podcast, Amber, and you guys know, but my friend Charlie Hohen gave me the advice. He said, you know, instead of trying to get like, you know, 10, 20, 30 people to endorse the book, he goes, shoot for the moon, aim for your top five, even if you don't know them. He said, make a list of the top five people who in a perfect world, would endorse your book. You'd have their names on the book. Because you won't get all five of them. You probably won't even get three of them, but you might get one or two. And so this was about 8 months ago. He gave me this advice and he said, you know, and then what you do is you basically target building a relationship with those five people. And so that's what I did. So I made a list of those people and I sort of looked at ways to build relationships with them very specifically, really, really far out in a way that could get them to pay attention to me. And in some cases, I did things that you may or may not have resources to do. So I made large donations to charitable organizations, for example, that were run by two of the people. And in that case, you know, there is the blurb on the back of the book, but you may not have access to that. You know, that's how I got my way in. And actually, that's the kind of thing that happens behind the scenes a lot that you don't see, is somebody will make a big donation or a big contribution. And that's how people kind of get connected. But other cases, for example, Seth Godin, I am a true fan of his work. And so I sent him a very detailed thank you. I shared this with the book launch team, the message and everything that I sent him, but it was just a very heartfelt email, you know, quick, but about how meaningful his work has been to me over the years in a very specific way. And it probably took me 3 or 4 hours to craft this email. I mean, this is what I mean. You go deep with these people instead of just sending somebody a message. And, you know, he's kind of known as being somebody who checks his email, but he got back to me right away. We had a few messages back and forth, and then that was it. And then when it was time to ask him if I could send him a VIP copy of the book, I, of course, responded to that message. And from like 7, 8 months ago, when I didn't ask him for an endorsement, I just wanted to send him a VIP copy of the book. And He responded back almost right away. And he said, I mean, quite honestly, he said, I'd love to get it. I can promise you nothing. I'm busy. And wonderful. You know, I love that. That's great. Another person, I won't mention his name, but runs a very big podcast. Somebody who I actually had the chance to meet a while ago, years back, just at an event that I was at. And we exchanged phone numbers, but we, you know, I wouldn't call him a friend or a colleague or anything like that. He might kind of remember me. He might not. We spent some time together for sure. But he came out with, every time that he's come out with something, I've kept it with him over the years. Or if he came out with a really good podcast that I was listening to of his, I sent him a text message and just said, thank you. And a screenshot of it. Or I said, you know, when he came out with a book, I said, you know, I sent him a text message, no response needed. Just wanted to say congratulations. I cannot even imagine how much this book is. It's going to help so many people. Super happy for you. Hope it goes great. I've already bought my copy. You know, congratulations. I mean, he'd give like a thumbs up. You know, like we didn't have conversations back and forth. I probably sent him 7 of these text messages. Didn't expect anything in return, right? And then sent him a message, you know, in that same thread, of course. This is over the course of like 3 years, 4 years. Sent him a message just asking if he'd accept a VIP copy of the book. And of course, he gets back right away and says, yeah, I'd love one. Again, I don't know if anything will come from this, but this is the idea that if there are these people you want to shoot for the moon, make your list of your top 5 and craft this relationship. Be kind. If you have the resources to make a donation or charitable contribution or whatever, of course, that's cool. But even if you don't, I can tell you, as a guy on the internet, very few people send you actual heartfelt thank you detailed messages. It almost never happens. You know, you'll get like a social media post like, hey, good on you. Your content has helped me so much. And like, I appreciate it in theory. I don't even pay attention to it. I can't. Like, I'm so fear-based as humans are that I'll look at 50 of those messages and I'll just gloss over them. And then I'll look at that one message from that person who doesn't know me, who calls me a communist pig who hates America for some reason. And I will dwell on that for 3 days.
Yep.
That's just how humans operate. So if you want to stand out, you have to kind of by definition put this effort into it. And that's a really great way. And then, of course, you do that far in advance. And then you just ask them, you know, if they'll accept a copy of the book. And there are cases where they might not, or they might not respond. You know, there's the other example where I flew to New York City to meet somebody for 30 minutes and we met and we had a great time. And then he ghosted me when I asked if he would endorse the book. And I listened to his podcast. I followed all of his recommendations of how to find endorsement. I even did a tongue-in-cheek, like wrote a message from my mother to him the same way as he did to Seth Godin asking for an endorsement, like thought that he would love that, showed how deep I ignored it, right? But then, you know, 2 months later, I was like, fuck it. He's already ignored me once. Like he can ignore me again if he wants. I'm just going to ask if I could send him a copy of the book. And so I did, and he got back right away, and I sent him a copy of the book. Again, don't know if anything will come of it. So in terms of acquiring blurbs, endorsements, it's not easy. It's a relationship game. These are not people who have read the book and genuinely like the book. That is a misconception. These are people who are willing to extend the trust that they have built painstakingly over the years to me. That's done because they've seen the work that I've done over a long enough period of time that they're willing to extend. Most of the endorsements on the back of the book, I'll tell you a secret. Those people didn't even see the book. Those people didn't even see the book. I offered to send them, some of them I sent them a copy of it. Other ones said to me, dude, I love you. I can't wait to read the book when it comes out. Absolutely send me a copy. For the time being, I've spoken to you so much about this. I trust you. Can you pre-write a blurb for me? I'll make sure that I'm cool with it. And then I might edit it a bit and approve it and send it back. Didn't even look at the book. This is the reality of that world. And I think that that's fine because what an endorsement is, yo, this is a good guy who you can trust. So acquiring blurbs, done. This is going slower than I thought. Building the team. Okay, building the team. Hiring. Most of the conventional advice that you get for hiring is advice that you get from people who are hiring for big organizations. You don't know how to read a resume. You don't know how to gauge quality in a field that by definition you are not an expert in. You have blind spots. What you are looking for is excellence demonstrated elsewhere that you can bring in-house. This is a part of, I don't remember what chapter it is in The Obvious Choice, but I talk about discovering you easy, about how there's one fundamental theory that actually helps you get customers, get referrals, and hire way easier. And I don't look at resumes. I don't put out job applications. And so what I did for a while is I followed book launches. I'm like, I got a book launch coming up. I'm going to follow book launches. I've put out books. I know, you know, and so there was this book launch that went out, and the book itself wasn't a book that I was interested in. It just wasn't a topic that I was interested in. But I was following along this book launch as I follow along a lot of other book launches. I was like, this dude nailed it. Like, this dude nailed the book launch for this book. I haven't bought the book. I'm not interested in the book. But the book launch, he nailed. Who is behind this thing? And so I started digging in deeper. And behind the thing is this 18-year-old kid. 18 years old. And so I followed him on Twitter. And I started commenting and building a relationship with him on Twitter. And then we sent some messages back and forth. And then and I learned a little bit more about him, about what he did. You know, this kid from the age he was 15 has basically been learning how to craft hooks on Twitter and build this stuff. So yeah, he's 18. But he is an expert in this new way to market books using social media in a way that I don't. Like, what I've realized is that I have all of these blind spots because I'm old. And somebody who's 18 or 19 or 20 years old has blind spots that I don't have, but is able to see where I'm blind. And I reached out to him and I just said, hey, I'm coming out with a book. You know, here's what it is. Here's why it's a big deal, whatever. You available? And he told me what he wanted me to pay him. And I kind of spit out my coffee a little bit because he was 18 years old. No joke, over the course of him working with me, he started college and he turned 19 years old. And what I'm paying him is more than his professors make that he's going to college for. And he's worth every penny and more. And so the idea is you work backwards from excellence demonstrated elsewhere in the real world. And you pay that person whatever the hell they want. Because what I have learned is that one person, this is the case with you, Amber, this is the case with Jason within our company, right? One person who was extraordinary at what they do is worth 10 to 50 times more than somebody who is just okay to good at that thing. That's the world that we live in. It's such an exponential world that if there's somebody who is truly world-class at a thing, they are worth paying them five times more than another regular staff member in that thing. And they will deliver you 10 to 50 times the benefit. I've seen this pattern play out over and over and over and over again. Because I had somebody who I hired to help with the book launch a while ago, way better resume, in her 30s, had worked on lots of books before. And you know what? She wasn't the right fit for me. I think she was very smart, but she just wasn't the right fit. She was good at what she did, right? She didn't blow me away. And so for videos as well, it's the same thing. I've decided that I want to invest in personal brand as part of the launch, but really moving forward, we're going much harder into YouTube. We're going much harder into video production. And so I started looking at, like, okay, what other authors are there out there that also have built great businesses, that's books have been around for a lot of years, that have great reputations, that are now kind of out of nowhere building up these online brands? Bonus points if they're not good looking or well spoken. Because if somebody is, like, really good looking, like, if you're like a Simon Sinek and you're like the most articulate human in the world, I mean, is your video guy necessarily that good? Maybe not, but like, a lot of people could do good stuff with how articulate that guy is, right? So an example of that is Robert Greene. Robert Greene wrote 48 Laws of Power. Obviously, you know, much more experienced than I am in authorship, and his books have great reputation and that. But, you know, he's not like, he's an older guy. He's not like the best looking guy, right? He's not particularly articulate. He's a writer. He's not a speaker. And yet this guy has built in the last three years now, millions of followers across YouTube, across social media. It's like, what the hell is going on here, right? So what do you think I did? I hired this damn video guy. Like the same thing. Excellence demonstrated elsewhere. Nobody's reaching out to this people. He's like 26, 27 years old, same type of thing. And what I did with him is when he actually quoted me what he wanted per month, I kind of laughed in his face because it wasn't enough. And I said, how about this? How about I give to you that as a base? And you give me your small, medium, high, what you think we're going to achieve in the next 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months across YouTube and across Instagram. And he's building out TikTok and stuff too. And I'm like, yeah, do whatever you want at TikTok. I don't really give a shit, but like, that's fine, right? I don't want to build your bonus structure on that. And he gave me those numbers. And I said, okay, here's your bonuses if you hit this small, medium, high at 3 months, at 6 months, at 12 months. And it's like, this guy can make, I think, up to 8 times more than what he wanted per month if he hits the high-end bonus. So it's a fire lit under his butt to work harder for me than the 2 or 3 other authors that he's working for. So again, incentive structures. So how do you find the right team? You look for excellence demonstrated elsewhere. You look for filters where the person might have been able to make something where they may not have had other advantages. You know, Robert Greene has advantages that he's been around for a long time. His books are, of course, great. He mentored Ryan Holiday, who, of course, has this massive brand and is lifting up Robert Greene with him, like all of this stuff. But he doesn't have the advantages of being articulate. He doesn't have a lot of time to or interest in like being a video guy. Like he's clearly not taking acting lessons in order to become a better speaker. And, you know, with the team, what I said to them is, this is a long-term game. Again, this is the beginning of the obvious choice book is the beginning of a 10-year flywheel, probably 20 or 30-year flywheel. The obvious challenge is coming out in another year and a half afterwards. There will be books after that. I said to them straight up, I actually don't expect any of the media work that we're doing. And I said this to my editor yesterday about choice when we were on the phone. I said, I expect the book to be received well, the obvious choice book to be received well, but I'm a first-time author. It's a business book. Business books don't have the virality that self-help books and stuff will. It takes time and they become kind of underground sensations first. It takes years, right? I think the obvious challenge could, you know, spike faster. But I said to video team and to my editor the same thing. I said, I really don't expect things to pick up in any capacity until after the next book comes out. I actually expect my social media to go down for a period, 6 to 12 months most likely, before it starts to really pick up and ramp up. And so the question that I have for you is like, what's your long-term vision? What's your long-term goal? What do you truly believe? What are you focused on? What team are you building around? What position do you want to be in the future? And are you willing to accept the fact that in the short term, it might be a bit of a step backwards? It might be a bit of a step backwards. Like I said, I don't expect the work that I'm doing with this book, The Obvious Choice, with The Obvious Challenge, with the video work that I'm doing, I don't expect to reap any of the rewards from that really in any measurable amount until after The Obvious Challenge comes out, which will be March or April 2026. So think about that for a second as you're kind of putting this through your own filter. Okay, organizing the outreach. We have a massive spreadsheet, okay? We use Google Sheets. It's shared between a bunch of people. We first just did a dump. And this dump is everybody who we're connected to personally. They don't need to have platforms or whatever that we think might like the book. any professional networks, colleagues. So I went through my Facebook, my email list, everything like that. I went through a couple professional organizations that I'm a part of, people who I have relationships with. And then we went through the couple key markets that we wanted to be in, you know, like CrossFit, like whatever, and looked at the top podcasts in all of those markets, the top ranking podcasts, and put the names of the hosts down on the list. Then we organized them basically into, do I have a strong relationship with these people? Do I have a loose relationship? Do I not know these people at all? The people who I have a strong relationship with, great. Just make sure I'm touching base with them. The people who I have a loose relationship with, let's support their content, right? Let's go on to their accounts. Let's buy their book if they're coming out with a book. Let's whatever. The people who I have no connection with, let's prioritize them because we can't build a connection with all of them in, you know, 6 months or so. But the people who we think we jive with and who we think are perfect fits for the book and their audiences are perfect fits for the book, let's follow them along and start to find connections with them. Might be connections via introductions. I found Twitter to be much more useful than Instagram in building connections. Maybe it's just this market, but I found it much, much more useful, even though my audience is much smaller. People just, even people with big audiences on Instagram are kind of checked out from Instagram, I found. I mean, I'm one of them. But Twitter, they're much more engaged. And then, you know, you follow them and you wait for them to do something that they're excited about. So you follow them, you like their content, whatever. And then you wait for them to come out with a book or share that they had a book or whatever, a product, a service, a digital program, whatever. And then I bought it. And I shared a screenshot of the purchase page. And I shared that on Twitter and I tagged them in it. And I just said, you know, this was a no-brainer. I didn't even read the sales page. I love this person. This person's work so much. It's not a lie. Like, they wouldn't be on my list if I didn't admire them. Well, of course, then there's a big thank you. They would tweet it. And then we will often have a bit of a conversation back and forth. Oh, I see you've got a book coming out. Oh, what's it about? And then, of course, they see the names of the endorsements. They see that it's traditional publisher. They see this type of stuff. It's like, oh, there's actually something here. There's also other people the Pitbull line, like ask for money, get advice. Ask for advice, get money twice. I paid for consultations, some people that we wanted to get in touch with. I just paid for half an hour of their time. Got their advice on how to do better on Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever. And other people who I just had, you know, other people that don't sell consultations, I just started asking them questions. But like detailed questions, like questions that they were uniquely served to answer, and built a relationship with them through that. And now they feel some ownership over the book. And so in terms of the outreach, the spreadsheet itself had all of the names. We organized it a few different times based off of those categories. And then when it came time to ask to be on podcasts and things like that, or send preview copy, VIP copies of the book, that type of thing, we already had this list made. If you've listened this far into the podcast, I want to invite you to buy a copy of my new book, The Obvious Choice. It's available now. A lot of people have been asking me what the book's about. The central premise is that it's learning how to position yourself as the clear and trusted answer to a specific group's problems. You see, a lot of people these days are trying to become famous to the faceless, anonymous internet instead of becoming the obvious choice to a smaller amount of people who are going to buy from you. It's actually much better, much more profitable, much easier, and much faster, and much less stressful to be obviously perfect to a smaller amount of people than just okay to a lot of people who are never going to buy you. You see, you don't need to be the best at everything or chase the largest audience. You need to become the most relevant to your people. What I do is I emphasize the importance of understanding your audience's needs, meeting them where they already are, and delivering such value that choosing anyone else feels irrational. And so pick up a copy of the book. It's in Kindle, it's in Audible, it's in hardcover, wherever you find books. Hope that you absolutely love it. And I was able to go through and I would send it out to people and I knew when I was going to follow up. You know, one-on-one messages, but I knew when I was going to follow up. And so we had tags in the spreadsheet thing like first outreach, second outreach, third outreach. people who actually, I'll get into that afterwards. And so that's what kept it like not completely ridiculous and unmanageable. It was a lot of individual messages, a lot of one-on-one outreach. The hardest part, to be honest, for me about the outreach was particularly amongst my network. It was about 300 people I messaged in my network. And everybody was in different places. I had to send out these messages through WhatsApp, Telegram, text message, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and email. And there are many people who I, you know, so I tried to think where they would check it first or most often. There were many cases where I'd send it. I mean, obviously text message was the best if I had their phone number. Email I found actually worked better than any social media. But then social media, sometimes I'd send it, like my follow-up, I would follow up on a different channel. And they would never have seen the message on Instagram, but they saw it on Facebook or whatever, right? And then other people, there were just stragglers. Other people got back to me 3 weeks after I messaged and said, hey man, just seeing this. Yeah, I'd love one, whatever, right? So you got to be really organized because you're going to have to follow up a lot.
Now, how often did you actually go into that spreadsheet? Because I know how much you love spreadsheets.
Every day.
Okay.
Multiple times
a day. We know how important it is if you were actually going into the spreadsheet.
Every day, multiple times a day. Yeah, and I hate spreadsheets.
I know.
I hate spreadsheets. I know. But yeah, really, really, really detailed. Any questions on any of the outreach stuff?
One, I think that it would be helpful because like one of the things that you mentioned is like when you were reaching out, you know, to the one guy, for example, where he's sending like the thumbs up as a response.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of people, like, so there's a term called rejection sensitivity dysphoria. So people who feel rejection, even if it's not actual rejection, that may be perceived as rejection. So how were you like overcoming that feeling of, oh, I put my heart into this, I get a fucking thumbs up, and then still message back, right? So overcoming that internal story that people are likely to create based off of that response.
I mean, it's kind of just like a, like, screw it, you know, what's the worst that could happen? They're already ignoring me. I think, you know, I think my perhaps more serious answer to you, Amber, is the more that you do this type of thing, the more you realize that all of that fear exists in your brain. I mean, rejection's a part of life. Perhaps it's my experience living in places where people sell things on the street all of the time. Yeah. You say, gracias, you move on. I don't think about what happens if somebody asks you for something and you can't do it, or you're unwilling to do it, or it's not your priority right now. You don't think negatively about that person. If anything, you respect them for asking, as long as they asked respectfully. And so, you know, my approach has always been, you know, ask for what you want, ask for it respectfully, say no problem if they say no, follow up once politely, make sure that they know that this is the last follow-up that you're going to do. Expect that, like, sometimes people miss it, or they're busy, or they're in passing, or they meant to respond, and then they forget about it, because I do. Mm-hmm. And that just happens. Try to create goodwill when you can, you know. So, you know, in this case, for example, October, like with this guy, right? October 5th, 2019 at 5:53 p.m. I said, I was listening to a podcast episode that he recorded from 2017. And I just said, this is my favorite podcast episode of all time. Your guest, it was Roy Sutherland, was a guest, is my hero. And he goes, and I just said, I just put two and two together that this was you. And he goes, yeah, that's me. I was like, well, you're even more of a god to me now. And he goes, just lucky man, we have a good platform. You know, we don't deserve it. Okay, June 20th, 2020. Another episode I was listening to from his podcast just said, this is great, man. And he just goes, thanks. June 25th, 2023. hey, it's John Goodman. We met at this thing. I'm hosting a big digital summit. I'd love to have you involved. This is when we did the Obvious Choice digital summit. Other speakers are blah, 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 blah. Here's a few details. And he said, thanks for thinking of me. Unfortunately, I've got too much on the go at the moment and I'm not taking on any new commitments. I said, oh, good. Thanks for getting back. And I can't wait to read your book. October 3rd, 2023. I took a picture of his book because I had pre-ordered it on launch day that arrived. And I just said, Shane, no response needed. Wanted to send a congratulatory note. You made this. Holy hell, that's incredible. I'm sure it's a busy day for you, but hope you're proud. I'm inspired by you, as I'm sure many others are. Congratulations. I just got to part two and looking forward to more. Thanks for writing it. October 9th at 8 a.m. of this year. No need to respond. Just wanted to offer a magic congratulations and thank you for completing your other book set. This is another book set that he did. What an accomplishment and what a gift to this generation and future ones. Thank you for doing the work that matters. He gave a heart. December 2nd, 2024. Hey, can I send a VIP copy of my book to you? Super proud of it. Think you'll love it. About small business and marketing without feeling like you have to be famous on the internet. Have a great Ed Thorpe story. I think you'll dig. If so, just need a mailing address and phone number. Thanks for considering. Info and endorsements here. He goes, yes, please. Here's my address. Wonderful. Grateful for you checking it out. So that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 outreaches dating back 5 years.
But what you did that was, I think, really helpful is the asking permission and then also like no need to respond, taking the pressure off so that way it doesn't feel like resistance to you personally, you know? Yeah. So I think that was really smart.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm fine if people say no to me, you know, like this case where it's find your top five, right? Mm-hmm. If you get one of them, it is probably more impactful than 50 people a tier lower than them in terms of what that name on your thing as an endorsement will mean to somebody who doesn't know you. You know, you think about just like, you see a book that a few folks that you know are talking about, you're kind of thinking about it, but like a book's a commitment. It's not a money commitment. It's a time commitment. Do I have time for this? Nobody has time for anything. And so, you know, you're doom scrolling on the toilet and you're going through this thing and you're not quite paying attention. You're not quite not paying attention. But you see as the name is the endorsement, you see the name of somebody else who's already earned your trust, who says something good about that book. It kind of becomes an auto buy. There's not a lot of names in a lot of markets that have that kind of cachet. And so one of those names versus 10 names of people who I just haven't built that yet. So you can always get names, you know, if you need to fill the space, you can always get names of like buddies of yours. It's like author of blah, 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 blah book. It's like, it's kind of just a space filler. If you have that one or two kind of anchor names on your thing. And anybody can do this. Like I said, I mean, these are people that I did not have any previous connection with in any way, shape or form. Like the president of Shopify. Like I'm not even an e-commerce guy. It's not true. I did have a Shopify website one time in 2012 when we had Mighty Trainer, the webcomic, which we sold our swag out of. So I did actually have a Shopify store one time 12 years ago. So I can't quite say that I've never had a...
What was it called again?
Mighty Trainer. You knew that, didn't you?
I did. My memory sucks.
Yeah, we had a fitness webcomic, man. That was fun. John, we sold t-shirts. It was great.
You're like the Kevin O'Leary of the fitness industry. Like, you know the Shark Tank, somebody comes with these like asinine pitch. Yeah, I'm selling ice cream that poops out of a horse. And Kevin O'Leary is, well, I actually had this business back in 2010. Yeah. I sold ice cream out of unicorns' asses.
I don't know if you know, but I have a big wedding portfolio, and I feel like this will fit beautifully into that.
I'm Mr. Wonderful, and my Mr. Wonderful wedding portfolio, and then Barbara just doesn't like anything. Today is Friday, and that means tomorrow's Saturday. For that reason, I'm out. Like Barbara doesn't need a reason to hate your shit. So she's out.
Let me keep moving because I want to hit everything in this.
Please continue.
we will continue with the ridiculousness in a future episode. So, you know, one of the things that we did not do with our launch is I did not create a custom landing page for the book. And I did not create big bundle offers. You'll often see this, particularly with nonfiction, business nonfiction, those bundle offers, you know, buy 5 copies, get this thing, buy 10 copies, get this thing, buy 50 copies, I'll go do a talk, buy 100 copies, whatever, right? You see these bundle offers all over the place. And they're often on this beautiful, fancy website. And so I decided to have HarperCollins build our website for us, and they built a landing page and it looks fine. But I also decided not to do a bundle offer. And the reason for that was twofold. First, I was realistic with who I am and where I am in this world. Nobody's paying me $50,000 to do a talk right now. You know, they pay me 10, 15, 20. I've gotten paid a few times. Nobody's paying me 50, right? So nobody's going to buy 1,000 copies of my book. And so the idea, I kind of, and then the second was, I kind of thought, okay, what's my goal with this book launch? Is it to hit the New York Times bestseller list, i.e. sell as many copies at launch as possible? Or is it to be the beginning of a 10-year flywheel? Because if it's to sell as many copies at launch, then maybe doing a big bundle offer and pushing that, because I just want copies sold in a very small amount of time. Maybe that's right. But if it's to be the beginning of a 10-year flywheel, I actually want as many copies of my book as possible in as many different people's hands as possible at launch. Ideally, 2 copies, because if they have 2 copies, they have 1 extra to give to a friend. A book that you get for free is very different than a book that a friend or somebody you trust or like gifts to you. Wildly different experience. And so I thought, I did a bit of a thought experiment. I said, what would I prefer? Would I prefer 1,500 books sold to one person that sits in a warehouse somewhere that then gets set up on tables for a talk that I give at a big event 4 months in the future? Or would I prefer 500 people buying 2 copies of the book each? So now you have 1,000 copies versus 1,500 copies. But version number 2 was 500 people owning 2 copies each, i.e. an extra copy that they have to give to somebody else. My answer was number 2. So I decided, instead of doing a big bundle offer and fancy webpage, what if I can mobilize my audience that is already going to pre-order the book to not pre-order 1 copy, but to pre-order 2 or 3 copies of the book? So everybody who's already going to buy 1 copy, can I try to get those people to buy 2 copies or 3 copies and pre-order it? That was the goal, right? And so I created a launch team. And in order to join the launch team, you had to pre-order a minimum of 2 copies of the book across any, you know, Kindle, hardcover, Audible, doesn't matter. But you were to pre-order a minimum of 2 copies of the book. And then what I did is I went to HarperCollins and I said, you've got these early galley copies that we send to media influencers and stuff. I don't really care about that. Can we do this instead? Can we talk about these? Because those early galley copies, like I have some from other books. Like I have one from James Clear for Atomic Habits, for example, because we help promote his book. I have one of the only like galley early copies of that book. And now that book's gone and been a big success, it's actually pretty cool to have that on my shelf. And I have that for a number of books. I was like, once the launch happens, no more of these books will ever come out. So these are limited edition. And so why don't we actually talk about it like that? Hey, if you order a third copy of my book, if you pre-order a third copy of the book, I will send you a limited edition early copy reader of the Obvious Choice book. You'll be one of the only in the world ever to have it. Once the launch happens, it'll never come out. And also, you will be one of the first people ever in the world to get this. Normally, this is only reserved for influencers, but I want to send you one, right? And so we launched that book launch team as if it was a launch. It was internal, right? It was to my existing audience. But it was internal as a way to mobilize them. And so I think we did some things really, really well with that launch. I think I probably could have nurtured and pre-sold the book more. I didn't really talk about what the book was or why it was important. I think I probably could have done that better and nurtured it and perhaps even shared some excerpts leading up to it, created some demand. But we ended up getting, there was 317 people on the launch team. About 35% of them upgraded to get three copies. So it ended up being about 800 pre-orders of the book that drove. So close to 1,000. And those people now are in a Facebook group, which is a launch team. The ones who, of course, got the third copy. And part of the reason why more people didn't get the third copy is HarperCollins would only send it to people in Canada, the US, or England. And so we were limited that way, right? So, you know, probably 40% of the people on the launch team don't live in those places. So most people who were, you know, there had three copies. So they got an early look. I've been sharing early chapters with them. I've tried to include them in the process a little bit, asked for their feedback. Little questions like, hey, what's more appealing to you, teasing a sample chapter or a sample of the book? You know, like, do you want like that word chapter in there? But here's where... So, okay, getting people into the launch team, first of all, I send an email asking people to follow up, and I wanted people to opt in first. So I didn't say, I'm pitching you on a launch team, order two copies of the book, because the hard part about that promotion is that it was a very complicated offer. You know, normally when you're selling something, you're like, hey, I'm selling something. Here's why you should buy it. Here's why it'll help you. Here's how much it costs. Here's the deal. Here's why you need to buy this now. Here's the time urgency. Here's where you buy it, right? Click, buy, enter in the thing. With this, I had to basically say, okay, here's how this thing works. You have to pre-order two books. The book won't arrive for 4 months. Like, I was asking people to spend like close to $100. And I'm not going to give them anything for like 4 months time. So number one, that's a hard offer to sell. But also, you don't buy it from me. You buy it on your local Amazon or local wherever it is. Then you have to email, then you have to fill out this form and email the receipt and upload the receipt to this form. And then I'm going to add you to the Facebook group. And it was just a very complicated offer. So I knew I needed basically a double opt-in in order to do it. So across all of our social media and then across email, I sent people almost a cryptic, like, hey, I'm doing a book launch team. You know, if you want to join, send me a message. And of course, I got thousands of responses across email, across everything. And then I sent back a more detailed, here's how you do it. Here's how you join, order two books. And then, of course, for the most part, it's kind of like crickets, you know, because then I'm asking you for money. People might have thought that it was free, people, whatever. So then, you know, it was kind of crickets. And so immediately I got responses. And then there was just like, I sent an email back to people and then I didn't get a response from, I mean, I think over email, there was like 800 people I didn't get a response from. So I, of course, expected this to happen. Follow-up is everything. So a few days later, I sent a follow-up, you know, quick bump on this. Totally cool if you're not interested, but we're closing doors on this date. Would love to have you in there. And of course, the follow-up, lots more people joined. I would say probably 50% of people that are in the book launch team came as a result of the follow-up. So if you are not following up, you're probably missing out on 50 to 60% of potential customers. Now, here's where the funny thing happened. When I first sent out the email, I thought it was a huge bust. And I was like, I went for a walk around the block at home. I was just miserable. And because I first sent out the email and I had a filter in my email to bring in people who joined the book launch team who filled out the form into a special folder so that I could then easily look at like the Facebook group invites and that. And there were no emails in that folder for like 10 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. It's like, gosh, like this is a bust, man. And like, it's embarrassing for me to the publisher, like all of these bad things, like really bad things, right? And then I realized that actually what happened was that I had already had a filter in my email that anytime the word unsubscribe is on an email, it puts it into a special newsletter folder because I'm subscribed to newsletters, but I don't want them in my primary inbox. I want them in a separate inbox. And all newsletters have the word unsubscribe. So I filter the word unsubscribe into already this newsletter folder. And so, of course, what happened was all of the emails that people were responding to were responding to an email from my newsletter, which meant that that email had the word unsubscribe in it.
Bamboozled by your own filters.
And they were also, of course, I go into that newsletter thing. There's 150 messages in there, right? So that was funny. So, you know, the book launch team, and then the other part that we did with the book launch team that I'm really excited about is, you know, I wanted the book launch team to guarantee a certain number of pre-orders. I wanted to give them samples of the book so that when the book came out, they were able to talk about it like they've actually read the book, because they have. I wanted them to have an extra copy of the book to gift to somebody else. And then the final thing is, Amazon reviews are really important, particularly early on. Like if you can get like 100+ Amazon reviews in your first week or two of the book launch, it's actually really, really valuable. Like that's a huge needle mover, and that can be hard to do. And so when people join the book launch team on the forum, I asked for their phone number. And what I'm going to do once the book comes out is one by one text message 15, 20 people a day and just check in with them, like personally, like from my phone. And say, hey, you know, it's John, you know, thanks so much for being in the book launch team. Really, really appreciate it. Have you had a chance to check with the book so far? If they say yes, would be super grateful if you wrote a review today. So personal outreach that way to be able to get the reviews. And then the other part that we're doing the book launch team to leverage reviews is I shared a chapter at a time once a week on Monday. And then I incentivize people I paid 3 people $100 each week that commented basically like their response to the chapter, what they liked, what they didn't like, if anything was energizing to them, whatever. And so what I'll do now is I have 8 chapters of comment threads there. I'm going to actually take those comment responses and I'm going to pre-write for people Amazon reviews based off of those responses. And I'm going to send it to them and be like, thanks so much for the feedback on the chapter. It would mean the world to me actually if you could post this as an Amazon review today. And so they're honest reviews from real people. All that I'm doing is making it easier for them, because if you just ask somebody for a review, it might not say what you want it to say, what you need it to say. This way, it's the real words, it's the real feedback. You're just making it easier for them to give more real life feedback in the moment of the book. So the book launch team has been great for there. But here's the negative of it is, I knew going into this, and I was worried about this, I'm really shitty at running things like that. I'm really bad at keeping engaged with things like that. I really like the idea of them. I'm pretty good at building them. I'm pretty good at building the systems for them. I 100% should have brought on a full-time community manager for that group, even a part-time. I did not engage that community the way that I should have. We had lots of plans of really good community networking stuff to do. We didn't do any of it. And I feel pretty bad. I don't feel like I let them down. I offered what I delivered. I delivered what I offered, but there was lots of stuff that we didn't promise, but we wanted to deliver above and beyond. And I didn't. And so, you know, I think as you're building these, like I knew this about myself going in. This is why I don't coach in any of my coaching businesses. I know that I'm not good at the day-to-day of running these things. And so I did not plan that well. And so as you're building out these things, you know, a good idea, I think, was to do the book launch team over the book bundles. I think we built it well. I think the structure of it was really, really intelligent, well thought out, both long-term and short-term. But I think that the execution could have been much, much better. And I definitely regret that, and I will do that better next time. Talent scouting. So I learned this from the PTDC. You know, the PTDC website, for those of you who don't know, was the biggest website in the world for personal trainers for many, many years. I mean, it still might be, but doesn't say as much as it used to. But one of the things that I did really, really well was I looked at other people who were already doing good work in the world, and I published them on my website early on. To the point where there's a lot of people who are now quite influential in our industry. Well, I might have been the first person to ever publish them and or pay to publish their work. As a result, the point that I'm at now, like 10 years forward, is a really powerful point because I was a big part of their journey. And so I look at this as talent scouting. You basically go out and you find people where the odds are in their favor. Like they're probably going to do pretty cool things. And you find them and you support them before others do in ways that others won't. And so as an example, this guy who works with me, who's, you know, now 19 years old, got invited to a this private meetup of college entrepreneurs. And so it was this invite-only private thing. This person basically invited like 30 of the top college entrepreneurs across the United States, flew them out to this thing, and my guy was one of them, right? And so I said to him afterwards, I was like, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you message all of them and say to them all, hey, I was telling John about you, because he was talking about me and the work that he was doing at this time. Hey, I was telling John about you. And he says that you sound really, really awesome. And he's excited about you. And he actually wants to buy a copy of his book for you. All that he needs is your email. And what he'll do is he'll send you an Amazon gift code and you can order the book. And so that's what he did. And we've done that a few times. And so number one, I've sent probably 50 Amazon gift codes to people to buy my book, as opposed to sending them a copy of the book. And the reason for that is cost me the same, right? But I'm buying the Amazon gift code and I'm sending it to them. When they order it now, according to Amazon, it counts as a legitimate purchase that's scattered throughout the United States. So it works much better for Amazon's rankings. It works much better for the pre-order rankings, all of that type of stuff. So the gift codes versus actually ordering the books. But the second is there's like a tangible money. Like these people know that I spent money to send them a copy of this thing. And that's how much I believe in them. So there was them. And then I just said to him, and there's been other people who I've come across as well, where I've just, instead of saying, can I send you a copy of my book? Or, hey, you know, I want you to be interested in my book or whatever. I just said, hey, you know, you're doing great work. I noticed you. I'd love to send you an Amazon gift code to pre-order a copy of my book. I think that it'll help you. And I believe in you. So talent scouting, and I'll continue to do that as well. Okay, let's stop there. We'll make this a two-part series. Shit, why not? The next episode, we will talk about the build-up and how we tested content across all of our channels and iterated on it based off of data to improve it. We'll talk about what we're doing 10 days out. We'll talk about the automations that I built into, like with ManyChat and stuff, into Instagram. And then we'll talk about the launch itself, what we're doing, and the podcast tour, lead magnets, what I'm doing with the VIP boxes, what we're doing with the meme videos, which is going to be really, really fun.
So excited.
You see that. and calendar invites to people to remind them to promote the book and all this fun stuff. So we'll talk about that in the next episode. We'll make this a part two.
And then if you want to go back to listen to the self-publishing versus traditionally publishing episode, that's episode 268.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Cool. All right. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, real quick, I wanted to invite you to buy a copy of my new book. It's called The Obvious Choice. And instead of me telling you about how good it is, what I'm going to do is just read a couple of the endorsements of others. So the first is from Jason Pfeiffer. He's the editor-in-chief for Entrepreneur Magazine. So you can imagine this guy has seen a lot of business books. Here's what he said about The Obvious Choice. He said, if you want to win in business without feeling like you have to win the internet, get this book. It can help any marketer, small business owner, and entrepreneur. Okay, here's another one from Harley Finkelstein. He is actually the president of Shopify. Again, if you want to find somebody who knows how to sell stuff, particularly sell stuff online, but really anywhere, like somebody who is the president of Shopify probably knows what he's talking about. So here's what he said. He said, consider this required reading for anyone running a small business. Goodman nails it when it comes to business insights. This book is filled with timeless advice, and unlike so many other business books, it's a joy to read. Every entrepreneur is going to get actionable takeaways from this read. If you're selling something, you need this book in your life. Trust me, you won't regret it. There's more endorsements you'll find on the Amazon page. Those aren't the only two, of course, but I'll stop there. Please go and buy a copy of the book. It's in hardcover. It's in Kindle. It's in audio. On Amazon, wherever you find books, hope that you absolutely love it.